Good morning and welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station UCTV. I'm your host, Kate Ariano, and this is the news of the University of Connecticut from this week. How did hot sauce unite UConn Nation during these trying times of the pandemic? Well, news correspondent Selena Daigle says it's because of a tweet from one man, Brian Jackson, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, class of 2012. When the UConn men's basketball team entered halftime, down 18 points against Marquette, on the night of January 5th, he tweeted, "If they win tonight, I'll film myself eating a spoon of hot sauce." And when they did. Then Jackson continued to post videos of him downing hot sauce until UConn fans made it a trend. From there, the men behind the Husky Ticket Project had an idea. Kevin Solomon, School of Business class of 2014, along with Jeremy Longobardi and Kevin Kortsep, both School of Business class of 2012, decided to utilize the trend to help them raise money to buy tickets to UConn sporting events to give to children across the state, not unlike the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge in years past. The Husky Ticket Project raised $60,000 within 2 weeks. Solomon said, "The cool thing about this whole thing is we were able to distract people from politics, from a pandemic, from all of the social injustices going on in the world." UConn administration introduced a possible plan to combat student financial constraints due to the pandemic by reducing the projected tuition increase. Daily Campus News editor Taylor Harton reports that the plan would cut the previously implemented increase in half for in-state tuition costs in fall 2021, coming in at only 2.2%. Since fiscal year 2000, this would be UConn's lowest increase. General university fees like housing, dining, recreation, and technology would remain the same for the next year. The new plan also calls for a new $28 per semester fee to increase the budget of mental health services at UConn. Dean of Students Ellie Daughtry said, "I am grateful these additional resources will allow us to provide students with the care and support they have called for." The school is in year two of its five-year-long plan to increase tuition. The UConn on-campus community was alerted to three suspicious fires that occurred at the store's campus on Wednesday morning, according to an email from the UConn Police Department. Daniel Drainville reports for the Daily Campus that the fires were lit in three separate locations: a dumpster at Wheeler Hall in the Hilltop apartment complex, a trash can outside Busby Suites, and a portable bathroom at the tennis courts on Discovery Drive. Police said that the fire occurred sometime between 3:30 and 5 a.m. Chief of Police Andrew T. Fournier said the UConn police and fire departments are still investigating these incidents in order to identify those responsible for the fires. Anyone with information related to these incidents is encouraged to contact UConn police. Two UConn students organized a new event called the Podcast Symposium to kick off this Sunday and continue into next week. News correspondent Nicholas Hellinghausen has the story.
Two University of Connecticut students will be hosting a podcast symposium on Sunday, February 21st and Monday, February 22nd. The symposium has a hybrid structure, as some components will be taking place in person while others will be held virtually. The event will begin with a keynote presentation on Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Conover Auditorium in the Dodd Center. Eight semester students, Vinayak Mishra and Mukundi Sipatla, came up with the idea of holding a podcast symposium while their lab partners in a biochemistry class. Mishra and Sipatla started out with the podcast during their junior year, called Agents of Change, where they interviewed leaders throughout the campus and brought attention to resources the campus has available for students to utilize when starting their own creative project. Once Mishra and Sipatla got their podcast up and running, they wanted to strive for something bigger.
As we were podcasting, we kind of learned there were so many hindrances that we went through. And so we kind of wanted to do a podcast symposium where we made it more accessible to students to, you know, podcast or join on creative ventures, you know, take advantage of the resources on campus.
Mishra and Sipatla applied for and received a UConn Idea Grant to proceed with their venture. They have been planning the event for a little over a year now and have had to change parts of their initial vision as well as event dates due to the pandemic.
Over the summer, everything, we had to shelf everything and kind of come up with two plans. We had our main plan and then our contingency plan.
The first event of the symposium, the keynote kickoff, will feature three keynote speakers who will give presentations on podcast networking opportunities. The speakers will help students get a clearer picture of the steps and components involved in podcasting. At the conclusion of the keynote presentations, members of WHUS Radio will describe the podcasting resources they have available for students on campus. The in-person portion of the keynote kickoff will have a maximum capacity of 25 people, but anybody can watch it through a live stream on Kaltura. Day 2 of the symposium will consist of two different panels. The first will be an interdisciplinary panel, while the second will be a college story panel. Both panels will be held through Zoom, where all students are encouraged to join the call. The panels will also be recorded and uploaded to YouTube, Facebook, and other streaming platforms for people to view at a later time.
We intend for this symposium not to just be a two-day event, but to follow as a more of like a permanent guide.
The podcast symposium was created to provide students with a starting point on their podcast journeys. Mishra and Deesip Hatla said they believe the hardest part of starting a podcast is taking the first step, and they hope the symposium will provide students with a wide network of mentors to reach out to when starting their creative ventures. They are currently working on a website where people can refer back to the recordings from the symposium and view the contact information for all the speakers at the event. Mishra and Deesip Hatla will be coming out with a special episode of their Agents of Change podcast before the start of the podcast symposium. They will be interviewing UConn President Thomas Katsoulias about his take on the creative opportunities available at UConn. From WHUS News, this is Nick Hellinghausen. Have a great one.
Before we move on, I've got a sports update for the UConn Huskies fans out there. The UConn men's basketball team beat Providence on Tuesday with a score of 73-61. They'll play again on Saturday at 1 p.m. against Villanova. The women's basketball team is set to play Xavier on Saturday at 3 after beating St. John's Red Storm by a whopping 77-32 on Wednesday. UConn baseball will make its season debut against the University of Virginia this weekend with games today at 3, Saturday at 1, and Sunday at 1. You can listen to the play-by-play right here on WHUS 91.7 FM all weekend. The softball team is set to play Northern Illinois University today at noon, Florida International University today at 2:15, and 4:15 Saturday. And Florida Gulf Coast University will be their final opponent Saturday at 6:30 and Sunday at 11:30. I've got a weather forecast for you Mansfield and Storrs residents. Today we'll have rain, snow, and freezing rain before 3 p.m., a chance of snow and freezing rain between 3 p.m. and 4 p.m., then another chance of snow after 4 p.m. We'll have some patchy fog between noon and 1 p.m., and the high will be near 33. There's a chance of snow tonight and freezing rain, mainly before midnight, then a slight chance of snow between midnight and 2 a.m. There will be patchy fog before 2 a.m., otherwise a mostly cloudy night with a low around 23. The sun will come back out tomorrow, giving us a partly sunny Saturday with a high near 33. Saturday night will be mostly clear with a low around 16. Moving into Sunday, it'll be sunny with a high near 32 and change to partly cloudy in the evening with a low around 17. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
It's no secret that the HUS in WHUS comes from the University of Connecticut Huskies. The W is just because we're on the east side of the United States. It's a radio thing. You don't need to understand it. This is WHUS Storrs, UConn's Sound Alternative.
As we move into our discussion segment of the show, please note that from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut.
All right, today I have here with me Jason McMullen, who is the program director at WHUS. He's been here for quite some time, and we're going to talk about his experiences at the station and, you know, what he loves most about it, what's made him stay. So, Jason, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. I'm afraid I have a minor correction. My actual title is program coordinator. And coordinator. If you want me to tell you what a program coordinator does, I would have a hard time telling you, but I can tell you what I do at WHUS.
Well, let me just first say, I apologize. Between program coordinator and program director, since we've got both of them, I always get them wrong, but yes.
You are definitely not alone in that. It's a fairly frequent misunderstanding, so don't worry about it.
So why don't you tell us what you do think you're supposed to be doing as program coordinator?
All right. So I work with the student-run radio station WHUS at the University of Connecticut, and I've had a hard time explaining the job, so this might get a little bit confusing. So feel free to tell me, Jason, slow down or go back, or let's just forget about this question entirely. But what I do is I provide operational support. So sort of the business of managing a large volunteer organization involves a lot of decision making and debates about policy and dealing mm-hmm. with strange situations when they come up, maybe a disciplinary matter or something like that. So I advise the students who make those decisions and write those policies. I also provide technical and operational support related to actually running the broadcast and the other parts of the media operation. So typically when there's a push at WHUS to start publishing a new form of media or mm-hmm. alter or upgrade an existing channel or way of publishing, I'm one of the people who will be in those meetings, and I may be the person who actually pilots or develops the workflow for the new channel, because I have a certain affinity and expertise that makes me a good fit for those types of tasks. I also help to keep the physical plant operational. So that's the computers and the radio audio studios, and provide support on cameras and lots of other equipment. I have a background in technology, which makes it relatively easy for me to do that kind of work. And I serve as the assistant to the chief operator. The chief operator is a role that basically all radio stations have to have. It used to be a highly regulated part of radio, and now it's much less regulated, but the federal government still wants there to be a chief operator for each radio station. And our chief operator is a person named John Zatowski, and that mm-hmm. normally there's supposed to be a backup, someone else you can call if there's a problem and you can't get the chief operator. And I serve that role at WHUS. So that would be turning off the transmitter if it was operating improperly and we were jamming another station, or fixing other types of broadcast issues.
Has program coordinator always been your position in your time at WHUS?
It has not. I've been in my current role for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was a volunteer member of the organization, and I sort of served as an elected officer on the governing boards a few times as well. And at that time I was working full-time in other areas, and I was just kind of doing this as recreation, and because it mm-hmm. it matched with one of my interests, which was media. I really enjoyed broadcasting and I wanted to learn more about it. And WHUS was actually the first place I ever did anything on the radio.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
So how did you get your start with WHUS?
I heard a promotion on the radio, because I used to listen to the radio a lot in my car. Mm-hmm. I think the tape player might have been broken at the time, actually, that's dating me, because I don't even know how many new cars have tape players. But back in the mm-hmm. day, I had a car with a tape player. And I listened to the radio a lot, and somebody was on the radio saying, hey, do you want to be a DJ? Do you want to come in and program better music than the music that I'm picking out? You can do that at WHUS. And I signed up for it. And I showed up for a training class that was happening at the UConn campus. It was run by people from WHUS. Mm-hmm. I ended up meeting some community members, which were older people that just lived in the area and did radio at the station, and also some student board members who were running specific departments at the radio station. And I liked the place and I stayed.
So you said that, you know, you got your start here at WHUS and you were creating content. You know, you wanted to be that person to put better music on the air than what you were hearing. So yep. What kind of content have you created in the, how many years have you been here?
That was in the summer of 2002. So okay. almost 20 years now.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah. And I've done a lot of different types of music programming. And I have a passion for music and a big collection of music, both on physical media and digital. So mm-hmm. sharing that with an audience is something I've done a lot. I wouldn't want to estimate how many hours I've spent doing live music broadcasting, but it's a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And I've also done a number of talk shows. I launched a podcast on my own. This wasn't through WHUS. WHUS hadn't even thought about trying to do podcasting when I started my first podcast, but I took some of the knowledge I had learned at HUS and bought some of my own equipment at home and started mm-hmm. doing a podcast.
That's awesome.
And the first one I did was a show where I would do dramatic readings of books. And I did that mm-hmm. show for a number of years. I think I put out about 180 or 190 episodes of that show.
Wow.
And I worked my way through a large number of public domain works of fiction and short stories. And I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it. I sort of got burnt out on it eventually, which it's easy to do with multi-year projects, mm-hmm. especially if you're trying to hit weekly deadlines. And if you want to yeah. find an audience and keep them engaged, it's really good to try to hit, you know, a weekly production cycle, at least some for parts of the year.
Yeah.
I also did a call-in tech talk show, which we used to call sort of Car Talk for Computers or Car Talk for Electronic Devices. That was mm-hmm. with a couple of other people from WHUS. One of them was a PhD student in computer science. And the other mm-hmm. one was someone who was pursuing, I think maybe political science, but he was a hardcore computer user. And I was maybe the most sort of conventional radio person on that panel. So I tried to put things in slightly simpler terms when the guys would really go off onto these tangents where they're practically speaking in code.
So I actually reached out to some WHUS community members to find some questions that they've always wanted to ask you. So my first question is from Kara Murray, the former news director at WHUS. She wants to know, what is the key to your longevity at the station?
I don't know. I would guess it's a combination of things, and some of them are probably things that I'm not aware of, but mm-hmm. I found WHUS to be an interesting and engaging community, both in terms of the student members, the broader academic community that occasionally intersects with the radio station, and the community members, including the audience. I often end up in conversations through email or occasionally on the phone with members of the audience or parents of student members as well. And it's mm-hmm. just a really interesting collection of people that I've been connected to through the radio station. And in any job or in any area of life, so much of what's good about it and so much of what's challenging about it is going to be about the people that it connects you with. And mm-hmm. in general, that's been a very positive part of working at WHUS and engaging with WHUS. And I would say that's probably the main reason I'm still there.
The second question I have for you comes from Faisal, the program director at WHUS currently. And he wants to know, out of all the concerts that you have seen at WHUS in your almost 20 years now, which one has been your favorite, if you have a favorite? I know that these favorites questions can be a bit difficult on the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take my best shot at it. I think the one I had the most fun with and that I've actually gone back and listened to the band the most afterwards mm-hmm. is probably Phony People, mm-hmm. which is a recent show that happened at HUS. But that group of performers is super fun, super engaging. Their stuff is very catchy. Mm-hmm. And we did that thing that actually has happened a lot here over the years where we took some student knowledge and some, you know, young people that are passionate about music, and they will help to connect us with artists that are still on their way up. And mm-hmm. then we turn around 3 or 4 years later and we're like, wow, there's no way we could afford to get these folks to come and play at the radio station now. And the other show I would say, which was one of the most arresting and weird confluences of music that I've ever heard. And this is from a long time ago. This is maybe 10 mm-hmm. years ago now. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the indie band,
okay.
but it was an indie shoegaze band, and they were playing mm-hmm. indie shoegaze music, which means very mm-hmm. melodic and almost trance-like and like not low energy, but a very like smooth, quiet kind of energy.
Cruising. Yeah,
exactly. And they finished their set, and the headliner, the band that was following them and that were going to close the show, had mm-hmm. set up all of their instruments and an entire stack of speakers and everything else out mm-hmm. on the floor, on the dance floor, not on the stage.
Oh, wow.
And as the final note of the final song was fading, they mm-hmm. just started pounding. And this was a band called Lightning Bolt, which was doing mm-hmm. post-punk noise industrial stuff, which was very grating and very high energy, very angry music. And it was a real interesting musical experience going from that band to Lightning Bolt in the space of about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I can imagine going from, you know, such a soothing, calm atmosphere to just bam in your face music right with you on the floor. That must have been awesome to be able to experience mm-hmm. the energy there. So the next question I actually have for you, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that this pandemic has put you far from the station, probably much farther than you'd prefer to be. So what has it been like being program coordinator from your house and not, you know, being, I know you've been at the station probably more than all the board members combined right now, as far as through the pandemic. So what's it been like?
It's been interesting. I should acknowledge my privilege and say that I think my experience is pretty similar to most of the people that are lucky enough to be able to do their jobs remotely, because in the context of the pandemic, having a job that can transition pretty easily to remote work is much safer and much mm-hmm. easier than it's been for a ton of people in this country and around the world. I didn't have a job that forced me to be in close contact with people, some of whom may be infected, and I didn't have a job that just went away, which is what happened to a lot of people. That said, it still has been challenging and difficult at times. There's been a lack of human connection and human contact, which I think is something everyone's been struggling with at this time. Mm-hmm. And there's been a need to innovate and come up with new ways of doing things. We started doing these remote broadcasts at WHUS as part of this, our response to the pandemic, and that was pretty challenging. And we felt the need to get it all operating as quickly as possible, because our alternative was just to be broadcasting canned music 24/7, which we didn't want to do long term. And getting that spun up and getting that operational was pretty challenging. And I'm still doing some of the mechanics of making that operate along with Faisal and some other people. And I guess the other part of it that's been interesting is I've always struggled with separating my not work life from my work life.
I can relate.
And the fact that my bedroom is now my office for the majority of the work that I do has made it even more challenging to separate those two things. And it's not like I never shut off my email or I never walk away, but there's always something else to do. And it always feels like, well, this is a fine time to do it. I'll just do it now. I don't have to wait till tomorrow morning. And that can be a very corrosive way of thinking, because it makes it really hard to have downtime and have time where you're allowed to relax.
I definitely understand that sentiment, because part of you, or I would say part of me, felt that, you know, being remote, having access to being on my computer just all the time for class and schoolwork, I was able to respond to people quicker, and I was able to get to WHUS work quicker. I could edit stories quicker, post them quicker, but at the same time, it was taking so much of that free time where usually, you know, I'd be walking to class or I'd be visiting a friend in a dorm room. And I realized a little bit too late that I needed that free time. And we're working on making sure that we implement that this semester, because it really is way more important than I think people realize. It's one of those, you don't know what you have until it's gone moments, I think.
Absolutely. And I've never been a big extroverted person. I'm not the kind of person who looks at like, wow, I've got 6 meetings today, that'll be fun, or that'll make me go quick. I'm like, wow, I've got 6 meetings today, huh? That's going to put me behind on all my actual work. But it's not like I hate meetings, but who loves meetings? Let's be honest here.
I don't think anybody does.
But it's been interesting having all the meetings be through video calls. In most cases, that's a bad thing. I think it makes it easier for people to just kind of use all of the time. So if you end up with back-to-backs, you're literally closing one video call window so you can immediately open another one, which gets old after a while, and you miss that 5 minutes of walking through the union or walking across campus or whatever it was.
I ended up scheduling my classes this semester as 3 back-to-back 1.5 hour classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so I get 15 minutes in between, or 15 minutes between each class from 11 to about 3:30. And it really takes a toll, because I'm sitting there and, you know, sometimes I just need more than 15 minutes to just get up and walk around. And that's one thing that I really, really miss about being on campus.
And there was at least one good part of it, I would say, which is that we started doing, this was a student idea and I just kind of followed along, which has been something I've done a lot in my career. And I think it's worked out well the vast majority of the time, but it was the idea of having shared office hours in a virtual space. So in a video call. And I've always like struggled with the co-working idea, like let's go to the coffee shop or let's all work in this big room together. And that I would often get distracted. And there are still some distracting parts of doing it in a virtual call, but it is better. Like, people actually shut off their mics if they want to eat or if they want to do whatever else. Mm-hmm. And if you are having conversations with people, it's usually because somebody actually wanted to chat or they wanted to check in about something. So that's felt like a really functional and effective way to do collaborative working spaces. That's actually worked better for me than the old way of doing co-working in a semi-public space.
I would have to agree. I've really enjoyed being able to have office hours for the station. And, you know, if it's one person in there, if it's four people in there, either way, you're getting somebody else's energy and you're able to, you know, just relax for a few minutes, talk to somebody just about how their day is going. And if you do have to go, you know, do some of your work, you go do work. The last question that I have for you today is, what are some of the most memorable moments that you've had at WHUS over the years?
Oh, this is a good question. I don't know. It's hard to pull things out. It's a whole lot of stuff. I would say my first time on the air was like incredibly exciting and exhilarating mm-hmm. and scary. I was just like, every time I turned on the mic, I felt like something was crawling up and holding me by the throat. Like, I couldn't talk mm-hmm. and I couldn't get my words out properly. And it's good to feel that level of excitement, I think. I think I got a lot better once I relaxed and once I became more casual and developed this ability to feel comfortable in the space, feel comfortable in this setting where you have a microphone right in your face and it's just part of what's there. And you actually kind of want to be engaging with it and thinking about it. And like, I'm talking to this mic all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's been a positive thing, but it's, I think part of that excitement and that fear, that performance anxiety was definitely an incredibly arresting and interesting experience. And I still feel a little bit of that, especially if I have to talk about something that I feel like it's really complicated, like it's really important that I get this right, mm-hmm. because I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want to send people in the wrong direction if I'm giving important information. I still feel some of that, like that fear and that engagement and that excitement. And that's a fun, or at least an exhilarating feeling. Maybe fun is the wrong word. Yeah. Aside from that, doing really long broadcasts, often during inclement weather, where we used to not have the ability to run on automation. So we were just live 24/7 with an actual operator in the studio. And over the years, particularly back in the old days when I was just a volunteer, I would end up picking up, you know, there's a blizzard. So, okay, I can do that one. And I guess I'll just be there until someone else actually makes it in, which would occasionally turn into like an 8 or a 10 or a 12 hour shift.
Wow.
Which gets a little old and the quality of the radio starts to suffer after a while. You start playing longer songs and maybe drowsing in your chair a little bit in between mic breaks, but it was fun. I definitely enjoyed those nights too, in the same way that they become good stories, even if they're not the most fun thing while you're living through them, which hopefully is what's going to happen with this COVID pandemic too.
Yeah, I think we're all going to have a lot of great stories to tell each other about getting under the covers and putting pillows around you to get really good sound, or going and hiding in a closet from your roommates, which if I had a closet big enough, I'd be doing that right now. But I'd like to thank you once again for coming on to talk with me today. You are a staple of WHUS, and I think I speak for everybody when I say we appreciate everything that you do for us. So thank you so much for taking the time to interview with me today.
Oh, thank you very much, Kate. It was my pleasure to talk to you today.
I'd like to thank Jason once again for chatting with me this week. Thank you to the Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith for our theme music. And thank you, listeners. I've been your host, Kate Ariano, and you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Have a lovely weekend.